David Hellman of DallasCowboys.com.
All right, here we go. This 5 o'clock hour. John McClain will join us at 5:30. And David Hellman, DallasCowboys.com, he joins us now on ESPN Central Texas. David, I'll start with this. Well, no, we have to start with Tyrone Crawford. That's the story, among other things. I know Jerry's has spoken out about, you know, his thoughts about Jason. But Tyrone Crawford, how does that affect him? Who has to step up, and how much is that a hit inside the locker room as well?
I don't think it'll be a big hit inside the locker room, because if I had to guess, I mean, Tyrone Crawford's not going to go anywhere. He's a veteran leader on this team. He's a beloved guy. He's not the type of guy that's going to disappear because he's on IR. So they'll still have him around. Obviously, you know, it's a hit when you lose a longtime veteran like that. I can't say it's super surprising. Obviously, he missed most of the offseason program with this injury. And, you know, he made it back in time for the season to start, but quickly missed two games very early on. I think it was week three when he had to sit down because of this. So it's a bummer for him. It's not super surprising just based on how much work he's been doing to try to get past it. What it means is probably a big opportunity for Tristan Hill to pull some of that weight as a second-round draft pick. He's been inactive for the vast majority of the season. They could move another guy up to the roster or maybe go get a guy, but that's you have the 58 overall pick sitting there playing defensive tackle. So I would look for him to get a shot at some more playing time to try to offset that.
David, what do you think is the reason they start so slow?
Man, and I'm not trying to be facetious. Like, if I had the answer to that, I should be applying for a job on the coaching staff, because I've been thinking about it since we got back from New York, and it's one of those things that kind of defies explanation. Like, why can't the offense get a rhythm going coming into a game? They certainly seem very good at it coming out of half. People love the joke, like, well, give the halftime speech at the start of the game. The other thing is, the defense is right there with them. They've only scored first in two out of six games to this point in the season. So your defense is giving up scores at the outset of games. Your offense is usually taking at least two, if not more, possessions to get into any type of rhythm. I have no idea why. It reminds me of the takeaways. Kind of hard to put a finger on an exact reason. I just know both sides of the ball have to be better, whether it's preparation, execution, whatever. Somebody's got to step up at the outset of these games to keep them from falling into these holes, because it's killing them.
I saw a stat, and I forgot who it was from, but of the 32 teams in the NFL, the Cowboys are the only team that has not started a drive in the opponent's side of the football, the 50, opponent's territory. Is that special teams? Is that turnovers? Is that not forcing teams to have to, like, basically go three and out after a kick?
Yeah, I saw that too, and it is. I mean, it's pretty staggering, and it's got to be takeaways. Like, they're not getting them, and the ones that they have gotten, if you think back to the Miami game and the Giants game, most of them are coming down when the opponent is driving into their red zone. So, good job holding them out of the end zone, but they got to try to make that happen earlier on, or at the very least, you know, get a return out of it or something. Because the Cowboys offense has proven that it can go on these long, sustained drive, but you got to get some help at some point. And to this point in the season, this defense just has not been able to take the ball away.
Jordan Lewis has made some plays. He made the interception the other day. Why does he get less time than, say, Anthony Brown?
I can't come up with a great reason for you other than that he does not possess that prototypical build that Chris Richard prefers. You know, he's like 5'10 and a half, 5'11. The Cowboys, they like their receivers or their DBs, not just taller, but longer arms. You know, I think they look for the 31-inch mark is around where they like their corners to come in with their arm length. And honestly, I think those measurables work against them. And I've been saying for a long time, I see nothing in his play on the field that suggests that should be the case. Fortunately for him, Byron Jones and Anthony Brown are both dealing with hamstring injuries. So regardless of whether they want to, I don't know if the Cowboys are going to have a choice but to give him some playing time. But I think that could be a net positive, because he makes the most of every opportunity he gets.
I know that there was Atlanta and the Chaz Green game when Dak took a terrible beating. But have you seen him, other than that one, perhaps take a more of a beating than he did physically in the game against the Jets on Sunday with some of the shots he took?
Yeah, there's no doubt he took some really big shots, and I don't think you can say enough about his toughness and his perseverance to keep getting back up and, you know, scrambling for first downs and touchdowns and standing in there making throws when he's getting popped. The difference is, you know, obviously the Falcons game that you referenced a couple years ago, I mean, he never had a chance. Whereas these last two games, the Packers and the Jets, you can't convince me that, you know, the offensive tackle play sank these game plans the way it did in Atlanta. Dak took a beating, there's no doubt. But I thought the tackles held up well enough to give this team a chance to win the game. They just couldn't capitalize.
Amari Cooper this week, if he's not there, do you see them bringing Devin Smith up this week now that they'll know he won't be there before the game?
Yeah, I would guess so. And I think they would have, you know, Jason Garrett said yesterday, it's not like they expected Cooper to only get a handful of plays. I think they were pretty surprised that, you know, he took that hit that wound up taking him out of that game. So if Cooper can't go, obviously you've got Michael Gallup, Tavon Austin. Hopefully Randall Cobb can come back this week. We'll see about that. But, yeah, if Amari's not available, I would imagine Devin Smith will be active for this game against the Eagles.
All right, David, people look at certain things. Maher that kicks a 93-yard field goal, whatever it was, drills it. Unfortunately, he's had a couple of misses. Is that a game where you can be frustrated with him, or is that a game that says, no, there's a reason we keep him because of the 62 and the 50-something-yard field goal?
I look at the totality of the picture. First of all, I mean, my coworker Nick Eamon made a good point. Is, you know, if he hits the 40-yarder and misses the 62-yarder, he's got the same percentage, but is anybody really freaking out about it?
Right.
Probably not, but that's the thing. I mean, he is a middling kicker. He's a 75%, 80% kicker. That's not good. I would argue it's probably better than what's available on the street. The bottom line is just that the Cowboys are not in a situation where they're going to feel great about their kicker for the time being. That sucks, but you got to work within that framework. So where I go with it is, well, why are you putting him in that position that you're – trotting him out there four times in a game and expecting him to go 4-for-4 to keep you in the ballgame? You know, we talk all the time about don't put players in a position to fail. You want to put them in a position to succeed. Well, I think that's putting your kicker in a position to fail. Obviously, in a perfect world, he can go out there and make 4 field goals, but we've established at this point that he cannot. So your offense has to execute better. You know, like I said, maybe that's not ideal, but that's where they are, and putting that much of the workload on his leg just is not a great idea.
You're not real proud of your LSU Tigers or anything right now, are you?
I mean, we could go all day. I don't remember the last time I was this excited about LSU football.
David, you did God's work. They did God's work. They beat the Gators.
Yeah.
That's a holy thing.
I knew my Noel would appreciate that. Yeah.
I appreciate what I see in them. There's no question about it. I do. I think it's a fun year for what they've done and how they've kind of changed up who they are. That's at Texas, winning against Florida. Where was that game?
It was LSU.
LSU. Yeah. And here they are. I mean, they're right there in the mix. And oh my God, there's this little sledgehammer, a couple of little still left in that conference. It's so much fun.
It's great. And look, LSU fans have been, you know, I would have cut off my thumb to have an offense like this. And it's a lot of fun to see it. It's been a really fun season, but it's been 10 long years. And I think as thrilled as every LSU fan is, we all still know that Alabama's waiting in mid-November. And until they prove that they can get over that hump, you're kind of just sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop. At least that's how I feel. But, you know, that's still 3 weeks away, so I'm trying to enjoy the hell out of this as much as possible, and it's been a lot of fun.
I'll make you a promise. That game will not be 9-6 this year.
I have a feeling you're right, but man, like I said, I tell everybody who will listen, like, I'll believe they can finally get over that hump when they finally do it. So if they win 3-0, I'll take it. I really don't care. I'm tired of losing to those guys.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. David Hellman.
Yeah, thank you.